This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And today, it's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Our questions can be sent to radioprogram@AOL.com. And Layla, before we get to the question that's pending, I don't know if you saw this, it's just out. It's a study that shows that in women, a prior day's stress can wipe out the benefits of a woman's healthy breakfast. Okay. Interesting. So in other words, you can try to eat a healthy breakfast as opposed to an unhealthy breakfast.
But if there's stress, forget about it.
But the stress may erase the benefits. This is actually in a journal called Molecular Psychiatry, which is a part of Nature, which is Nature is a very prestigious medical journal. So, what they did in this study is they gave women two test breakfasts. One was a biscuit with gravy that was laden with saturated fat, and the other one was a healthy biscuit, which was made, they say, with sunflower oil that was high in monounsaturated fat. Okay. We got a problem with this, the experimental setup. Okay. The experimental setup is, you know, a choice between, you know, probably not too great breakfasts, and their contention is that saturated fat is the problem, and that, you know, substituting monounsaturated fat from sunflower oil, which is not a preferred source of fat, is a healthier choice. I would argue that that is debatable. However, what they demonstrated prior is they demonstrated that markers of inflammation and oxidative stress were worse when you had the, you know, the gravy-soaked biscuit as opposed to the biscuit made with the healthy fat, so-called healthy fat. They already demonstrated that. So that the premise, they demonstrated that premise. Then they tried these diets, and they found that if there was a prior day stress, the benefits of the, quote, healthier breakfast were negated by a prior day stress. So, you know, I gotta say, what would we do? How would we characterize if we wanted to set up that experiment? Let's say we want to replicate that experiment. How would we set it up for an unhealthy versus a healthy breakfast?
Okay. I would take that biscuit with sunflower oil. And did that sunflower oil biscuit have gravy?
I don't even know. I don't even know.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I would take a biscuit.
Right.
A biscuit, and that would go under the umbrella of unhealthy breakfast all around.
Period. Right.
No matter what type of fat is in there.
Right.
It's the biscuit.
Right. It's basically refined flour, you know. That's the problem.
Right. Refined flour.
So you can put lipstick on a pig, you know, but you can't, right? It's a biscuit. So you're going to tart it up with sunflower oil and make it a healthy biscuit? I don't know.
No. Not at all.
Okay. So.
And I wonder if they did, how would we set it up? If they did the research with what you and I would call a healthy breakfast, that could be, you know, a couple of organic eggs, an omelet, some leftover salmon with some salad or maybe some sliced avocado or something like that.
Can I tell you what I had a couple of days ago? I had a little more time in the morning. This is what I call a healthy breakfast. I had more time, and I had some leftover chicken. And so I made, you know, I scrambled some eggs in a pan, and I poured out, you know, the two eggs in the pan. And that made a nice, like, flat kind of crepe-like thing.
Yes.
And then into it, I scooped some avocado and some chicken and some and some tomato sauce, and then I folded it up, and I think that's a healthy
very
breakfast.
Nice.
You know, notwithstanding that it's the so-called bad cholesterol, you had egg yolks, two egg yolks, and chicken, which is, you know, it was kind of lean, you know, but...
There's no such thing as bad cholesterol in our food.
In my opinion.
Dietary cholesterol is a good thing because it lets our liver know, which works on a negative feedback loop, that there's enough cholesterol hanging out here. I don't need to churn out so much.
Right.
Dietary cholesterol is a good thing.
Not a problem.
In that regard. And our brains need it. So.
So then I had a snack of a few pistachios afterwards to, you know, for dessert.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, so what would be...
That's a stick to your ribs breakfast, yeah.
And a bad breakfast? A bad breakfast?
A bad breakfast? Well, we could, you know, the return of that biscuit, or it could be a bowl of cereal with some skim milk.
Yeah.
And some juice and some toast.
Yeah.
Your typical low-fat, let me reduce my calories diet.
Or worse yet, like, I mean,
right?
Really, for really bad, you want to go to real bad. It would be like a... Put a Pop-Tart in the toaster. You know, it's like...
Oh, that's it.
Artificial
Pop-Tart,
colors, flavoring,
donut.
Sugar, refined carbohydrates, you know, a lot of white flour. And they're, you know, that's a real inflammatory bomb, you know, with no redeeming value nutritionally because it doesn't have any... There's no plant polyphenols. There's no... virtually no antioxidants present in there. It's just basically empty calories.
Right.
So let we would propose that they redo that experiment. However,
they should redo that experiment. Yeah.
But I think the point is well taken. Is that, and the take-home message is that, you know, we have a lot of patients who are very nutritionally conscious, but you know, if there's nothing as toxic as stress, bad thoughts, bad attitudes, bad mental orientations, because you can be as fastidious as you want with diet. And if, you know, you're lonely, isolated, stressed out, you know, if you're, even if you're orthorexic, like fearful of any, you know, some people get a little too obsessed with this, it may at least in part negate the benefits of a healthy diet.
That's true. And for those who don't know, orthorexia is defined as, you know, an obsession with eating correctly all the time.
Yeah.
There's you know, to the detriment of your own joy.
There's no joie de vivre. No joie de vivre.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, I just thought I'd share that study with you. As flawed as it was, it makes a point that you know, stress
and you know
is
what?
A killer.
This is very interesting to bring up because I know one of the things that we address in our questionnaires for our new patients who come here is to somehow gauge the amount of stress in their lives, if they feel stress, how they deal with it, and so forth and so on. And really, above all else, it's the reaction of the person to that stress in their lives. We all have stress.
Yeah.
It's called, you know, life, living, you know, there's all kinds of things. Physiological stress, some examples of physiological stress, not eating right, not getting your nutrients, nutrient deficiencies. This is a physiological stress, not getting enough sleep. Not getting enough sleep just for one night will cause stress in the body, cause high cortisol, cause more insulin resistance, and so forth. But psychological stress also has to be, you know, discussed. And this is really holistic.
Yeah.
Because when you're able to change your reaction to the stress in your life, the emotional stress, your partner, your work, your life stress, whatever is going on, whatever the difficulty is, if we are able to change our reaction, that means everything.
And, you know, the R word is resilience. We want to cultivate resilience because we're not going to ever create for ourselves a stress-free zone, you know, like a... you know, what they're trying to create on the college campuses, you know, these little, little retreat zones where, you know, you can have, milk and cookies and sit there in your pajamas and watch cartoons because the environment is too stressful. That's,
that's a return back to childhood.
And childhood, and childhood is very idealized, but childhood is very, can be a very stressful time. You know, so even in under the best circumstances, it's a lot of challenges.
It's a lot of change. Yeah,
a
it's
change.
A lot of change.
Yeah.
You couldn't pay me to go back and be an adolescent all over again. Oh,
Yeah, don't envy those. Don't envy the kids. Okay. All right. So let's get to the question, which is a straightforward question about strontium.
Yes. Marianne writes, "Dear Dr. Hoffman, thank you for all the wonderful information you've made available. It is truly a blessing to listeners and viewers."
That's nice.
Where are you viewed, Dr. Hoffman?
Pardon me?
Are you viewed anywhere?
Oh, viewed.
Yeah. She says it's truly a blessing to listeners and viewers.
Well, you know, that's interesting. I do some video stuff. I recently posted a video that I did on the subject of inflammatory bowel disease. It's on Facebook. So I guess people, that's visual, and people view it. It's if you go to YouTube and Google, or just plug in my name, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, YouTube, you'll see a series of YouTube videos. I prefer, I'm so used to radio, I'm an old radio hand, and I really prefer this medium of communication because, all you have to do is think and talk. You don't have to make sure that your tie's straight or that, you know, your shirt matches your sport jacket or, you know, your hair's in place and, you know, or that you're blinking your eyes too much or you're, you know, furrowing your brow. No, because that's distracting. And
yeah,
I give a lot of credit to people who can just seem really natural, while being on camera. That is a real skill. And, you know, it's something that I do from time to time, but I prefer the audio channel.
All right. So Marianne writes, "I've been advised that it is imperative that I get it treated for osteoporosis with medication. My T scores are you sitting down, Dr. Hoffman?
I am.
Spine, yeah. Spine is negative 4.2.
Very bad.
Hip is negative 2.3.
Not so bad. That's only osteopenic, but the concern is when you have such bad spinal scores, you can literally have spinal compression fractures, which are devastating and painful. Yeah. And cause you ultimately to become a hunchback, you know.
Yeah. Forearm is negative 3.1, and I'm going to ask you about the forearm in a minute. Yeah. Marianne is 69 years old, was on Beneva for about a year and a half.
Didn't work
around 8 or 9 years ago with a positive result, no side effects, but she stopped the Beneva because of the bad reports.
Yeah.
She's wondering now, would strontium suffice, or do you think a drug Forteo is appropriate?
This is interesting because, and I don't want to do a medical consultation here, but I recently saw a patient like that, younger, who had a situation where, unfortunately, she went to a doctor who was overzealously prescribing thyroid medication. Now, thyroid medication is great, but sometimes holistic doctors use it when it's not even conventional doctors wouldn't. And that's to the good sometimes if you use it correctly. But this doctor was overzealous. It was given unnecessarily at very high doses. Well, the net result is too much thyroid can cause osteoporosis. So this woman at, I think she's around, you know, 50, has really bad osteoporosis, a similar score. And she was really disappointed when I gave her my opinion, which is that I really do think she needs medication. That I did, you know, she was hoping, you know, that I would be tolerating it so doc, that I would say, no, we have natural ways of dealing with this. And it's quite possible that strontium may be enough, along with vitamin K and vitamin D and our arsenal of supplements, Osteria, maybe some Ostanol. These are the things that we use would be enough, but I don't want to take a chance with a young woman. And, you know, we're really close to the threshold where fractures can occur readily. So I might suggest that she go for conventional therapy. Forteo is probably the best treatment, although there are others. Mm-hmm. And then see how she does it. Like, she only can take Forteo for a couple of years anyway. So at the end of that, we can explore how much improvement she's made. We can begin strontium. I'm pretty sure that strontium would be compatible with Forteo, but the problem is when you use both, you don't know what's doing it, you know, so it's hard to ascertain what's doing what.
She says she would feel safer with Boniva since it worked for her before.
No, no, no. It's not weak.
Strong
it's
enough,
not strong
Boniva?
Enough. The oral medications are too weak now. Plus, there's actually evidence that you can only use those medications for about 4 or 5 years. You will get increase in bone density, but after about 4 or 5 years is an increase in fragility. So now it's being recognized that these medications, many women were using them for, you know, 8, 10, 12, 15 years. And the net result is, they're putting themselves, after some initial improvement, there's diminishing returns. They're actually going to get a higher risk of bone fragility. So, yeah. Unfortunately, things like Forteo, they're injectable. And same thing with mm-hmm. Prolia, and same thing with, Reclass. These are injectable or infusion medications. It's kind of a nuisance. But for such a profound degree of osteoporosis, I would say, I think, prudence would dictate that you go conventional route.
Okay. Dr. Hoffman, I question.
I mean, for a minus, minus 3.2 or 3.5, I think you could probably go natural. But 4, that's concerning.
Negative 4 is different.
4.2, I think it was, right?
Yeah, negative 4.2.
That's bad.
What's going on with these DEXA scans where I understand they're measuring the spine and the hip? These are weight-bearing. This is weight-bearing skeleton. But I see forearm.
Yes.
And her forearm is a negative 3.1.
Right.
Unless you're doing push-ups every day, why are they even measuring the forearm?
Well, this is the problem with the forearm is that it only becomes...
weight-bearing bone.
Yeah, it only becomes weight-bearing when you fall forward, which is typically you put your arm out and you fracture your arm almost regardless of whether you have osteoporosis. It's something which... has more to do with your balance and your relative clumsiness than the strength of your bone. Also, I've noticed that many patients get really good results with their hip and their spine, but their forearm doesn't improve. So something else is going on there. It's a different type of bone, perhaps, it probably is responsive to some weight bearing, and one of the best exercises you can do is a plank exercise or push-ups.
Yes.
It's really good for you, and that is a way of strengthening your forearms.
Hmm. Yeah. Oh wow, Marianne, best wishes to you. Best of luck. Thank you for your question. All right, we've got a question from Rona. My husband recently noticed darkened urine and saw a urologist who did a cystoscopy and a CT scan, finding a very enlarged prostate affecting his bladder. He gave him temsulosin and finasteride.
Flomax and Proscar.
Proscar, okay. He's already been taking 160 milligrams of saw palmetto for years and 140 milligrams daily of beta-sitosterol.
Right. Well, you
It didn't work.
See, and that's, I have to say that those things may, to some extent, prevent prostate enlargement, but they're less powerful than the medications. And, if you have a very enlarged prostate, just taking saw palmetto isn't going to shrink it that much. And it's not going
to
relieve
your
urinary
problems. Don't you need to start taking things like saw palmetto in your 30s?
I'd like to think so, since I've been doing that. And, thank goodness I'm knocking wood here. No prostate problems as I near the age of 64. What these two medications do, one is a blocker that reduces the nerve impulses to the bladder so that you can, frankly, so you don't have to pee all the time. Okay. That's tamsulosin or, Flomax. And the other is Proscar, which actually, shrinks the prostate. And, it's a dehydrotestosterone, blocker. And it is helpful, because it blocks a certain type of testosterone, the so-called bad testosterone, that influences prostate size. And curiously, the side effect is that it helps to preserve hair. So it's used it's actually the same medication as Propecia, which is used for baldness, for male pattern baldness. So that's a good strategy at first to see if that can alleviate the need for surgery. Ultimately, if the prostate is too large, you can get green light laser surgery or some form of surgery to relieve the pressure. And that usually works ultimately. But first line is those two medications are, I'm fine with that. And I have to say that, you know, you could use boatloads of salt palmetto. And the other is the, what do you call it? The concentrate, which is also being highly touted. I mean, you listen to the radio, you get commercials for this all the time. They work only to a certain extent and not, can't get full relief.
Right. Interesting. Okay.
Unfortunately,
Rona, best of luck.
Unfortunately, that's all the time that we have for today's podcast.
Okay.
But we managed to answer a lot of questions. So we encourage our listeners to send us questions. Send them to radioprogram@AOL.com, and we'll do our best to answer them. We got a backlog of questions, so it may take a couple of weeks to catch up. And we also want to urge you to check out the many other resources that you'll find at drhoffman.com. We've got lots of other great podcasts with interviews. We have a weekly radio program that you can listen to live, or you can listen to the podcasts after they've been broadcast. And we got great articles by yours truly and by Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin. What's your latest article on?
Oh, my latest article is on getting too much omega-6 fats.
All right.
Yeah. Sounds what are the good. Sources?
I'm looking forward to that one. All right. Thank you for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.